All right, you ready? Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Two Titans and Two Hunters this week, a Destiny 2 podcast, a show where we discuss tips, tricks, and tools to help all Guardians succeed and enjoy playing more. What makes us different? Well, we're not streamers or YouTubers. We just have a passion for Destiny and are dedicated to keep Guardians informed and up to date on all the latest Destiny 2 information, news, and opinions. We encourage your questions and feedback. You can contact us either by email, twotitansandahunter@hotmail.com, or on Twitter at @2_titans_hunter. Now on with the show.
So today I am joined by a Titan who has worn his pink armor into Iron Banner this week with pride. A proper hunter who takes pride in rocking her sword and fusion rifle in the Crucible. And then the other is a ranger, part-time hunter, who's been off exploring the Emerald Abyss. Welcome.
So, do either one of you want to go into Gambit first, or?
All right.
You volunteered?
All right, so, right before we get Season of the Drifter dropping, we're getting some changes to Gambit. Actually, I should say as Season of the Drifter drops. So, coming March 5th, we're going to get some quality of life improvements to Gambit, which, just looking over these, they're all great improvements. They're all things I think are going to be a good change to the game. So coming March 5th with the Season of the Gambit, or Season of the Drifter change to Gambit, we've changed the third round of Gambit into a Primeval Rush Sudden Death. So instead of, you know, if each team wins a round, instead of playing that third round out, now the third round's going to be a rushed, you know, just a sudden death rush with both teams having a Primeval up. This is going to speed up Gambit matches overall and add a change of pace to the final round. We've also overhauled how we choose the invader spawn location, increasing the number of invader spawn points for each map. This should greatly reduce the chance of spawning very near or in direct line of sight of an enemy guardian. There's like two or three spawn points on a map, and you can sort of camp those spots or sort of in line of sight of those spots. And as soon as someone comes in, hit them with a rocket, hit them with a sniper, you know, take them out. They've implemented idle protection, which means that the players that remain dormant for a long time will not receive end of match rewards or infamy points. So it should hopefully either cut down on the number of people just sitting in matches doing nothing, you know, won't get any rewards for it. Hopefully we'll kick them to orbit so maybe you can get an active player and actually have a chance at, you know, winning the match or winning that Primeval Rush. And the Triumph Light vs. Light can now be progressed by killing any Guardian using a super, not just invaders. They should make attaining the Dredgen title a little less daunting. And now for the big changes, which I think are going to be really interesting to see how these play out. They've adjusted all three blocker types. So now your small blocker is going to be a taking goblin with less health than the previous phalanx. So your small blocker now won't have a shield, you know, to be able to hide behind. But there may be an issue with the goblins shielding each other, which they claim they haven't seen much in playtesting, but you know it's going to happen.
You say mm-hmm. that, though. There was a concern raised on Twitter about the goblins shielding each other by Achievement Raider and Bo Solaris, and Cosmo responded from Bungie basically saying they can no longer shield each other forever and you can jump in and break it up quickly. We're going to keep an eye on this. But then over on Reddit, DMG responded to the same kind of question with a slightly different answer. So he goes on to say goblins can absolutely shield each other. In playtests, this has happened, but not as frequently as D2 launched due to changes in an earlier hotfix. We have not encountered any instances of infinite shielding, so players will be able to eliminate these enemies after a short time if the issue occurs. We'll be monitoring when these changes are live to see how this to see how this goes.
Yeah. So much for finishing that sentence, right?
So our small blockers, you know, they're taking goblins now. I'm going to throw it out there right now. I'm going to put some money down that we're going to see some matches where the goblins are going to infinitely shield each other. It's going
to
happen.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Whenever he said after a short time, you'll be able to break it up or whatever, right?
You're going to get four goblins all shielding each other. You won't be able to kill them. You won't be able to get them off the bank. And they'll go, that was a one-off. But it just seems very weird that DMG is saying one thing and Cosmo saying the other. So one hand's not talking to the other now.
Right, good guys. It's also the other thing.
It's one of those things.
And the thing where time matters, right? And you're literally racing out of the team to kill it first, right? He's all like, well, when they do shield each other, just wait a short while. Those shields will break and you'll be able to kill them. Whoa! I don't want to wait a short while, dude. Stuff is being timed. Yeah. You know? Hello? Did you forget this? You know, we're in a thing where it's skill-based and timed, right? I don't want to remove the skill part and just sit on my guns while these two idiots are shielding each other. No. What do you mean, wait a short amount of time? No, that's not a thing, okay? Stop doing that.
I think you can melee them to move them further away from each other. And you can throw, like, the Warlocks can throw their solar nades down and it kind of makes them jump backwards away from each other and stops them from shielding. So there are things that you can do to stop them from infinitely shielding.
Yeah, but I've tried to melee things.
This is going to happen.
It doesn't happen at all.
It's happened in Nightfalls. It's happened in Strikes.
Yeah.
It happens in the raid. You know, it's going to happen even though one person's saying no, the other person's saying yes. Ridiculous.
Not even the goblins. It's also like inside the forges, I've noticed, where the servitors will infinitely shield each other. Especially when you're fighting the one forge where it's got the big servitor in the sky. He'll put down shields to the smaller servitors, and then they'll come up and shield him too. So it's not just goblins. Servitors shield each other infinitely too, man. I've noticed that, and that's annoying as hell. How come he's not bringing that up?
Yeah, it's something that's going to happen in the game. You know, the mechanic is there. Even if it's one every, you know, 1,000 matches, if you're in that 1,000 matches, it doesn't matter to you that 999 matches went great. You're still ticked off sitting here going, I would like to finish these guys off, and I can't. Our medium blocker is now going to be a taking captain with more health than the previous knight. So that's going to be interesting because captains are a pain in the butt. And I'm hoping that the taking captains won't just sort of morph around the map like the taking knights like to. Because they really enjoy waiting until you're about ready to hit them with something big, and then they morph around the map and sneak up behind you and then murder you. Large blockers are now going to be the taken knights with more health than the previous ogre. So our knights are going to move to the top, you know, 15 moat spot. Captains are going to be the mid-tier. Goblins are going to be the first tier. So we're getting rid of our phalanxes altogether. And an issue was raised, you know, with the third round becoming the sudden death primeval rush about heavy ammo. Can one team just hoard the heavy ammo? Primeval comes up on the third round, boom, Zimmer with hot heavy ammo. And Robbie Stevens, the game at least, responded on Twitter, all power ammo is removed at the beginning of every Gambit round. This has been true since the Forsaken launch. Sudden death will put both teams on an equal playing field. There will be more details about this, you know, in the patch notes for Season of the Drifter. So you won't have any heavy ammo going into that third round. I assume it'll still spawn like it does, you know, in every round, but you're not just going to be able to hoard all of it up.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a timer, and it gets removed at the end of every round anyway now, so I'm hoping it's just going to be the same kind of thing.
Yeah, so your supers you should be able to hang on to, but but your heavy ammo you won't be able to hold on to. And again, they'll detail more of it, you know, and maybe they'll take those away too. They said, you know, they'll detail it more as we get closer to time, but at least it's nice to see, you know, one team can't just have, you know, 15 rockets or sleeper or queenbreaker shots and just melt their primeval the moment it comes out. They can just use their Chaos Reaches instead, which, as someone, one of these, the top tier ogre changes, you know, getting rid of that taken ogre from the large blocker, makes me happy because I'm sure I'm not the only person to have unleashed my 8-second Geomag stabilized Chaos Reach against the wrong ogre. The one I thought was the primeval and was just a blocker, and the heat blocker went down, and I said, oh, I need to kill him. I need to kill the other ogre. So I'm happy that we're not going to have two ogres now at the end to try to figure out, okay, which ogre do I need to kill?
Not just that, but I can't be the only one that got eye blasted off the map by that stupid taken ogre boss.
Right.
Right?
Oh, yeah. There's so many times I've gone down from ogres going, yeah, you'd like to get close to me. You're not going to. So I'm glad the blocker ogres are going to be on. I assume the boss ogre, because they didn't say they were changing the primevals up at all, just the three levels of blockers. So there will still be some ogres, but there should be fewer ogres at least.
Oh, my God. I was actually being hopeful for that, and now you just crushed it.
They could still change it, but, you know, they haven't said anything about changing the primevals, just the blockers. But at least it'll be one ogre and not, you know, six or seven ogres in a game.
I just wanted to point this out if anybody didn't know about this. Regarding obtaining the triumphs with the new changes, and this was, again, addressed by Bungie on Reddit. So somebody asked, Gambit with the third round sudden death has some interesting implications, like, how will people get enough motes for the Taken Whisper Triumph, which requires 7 large blockers in one game? Same goes for the Protect the Runner Triumph. As a collector, you've got to collect 100 motes in two rounds. Just makes it even rarer now. And the HVTs are going to...
That's high-value targets.
High-value targets are going to be even rarer sight with those third round. And I hope Bungie will make made aware of this or make corrections for this in the new update. And Bungie responded with, the team is aware that this will affect some triumphs and working on some changes for later in the season. So they know about the issues that are going to impede some people's triumphs, but it's not coming with the 2.2.0 update.
So when they look into the Infinite Goblin Shielding, they'll also look into resolving this issue.
I love how you say look into, not resolve, by the way. And the other thing is not like HVT, high value target. High value target!
Yes!
It's just dawned on him at this moment of reality after years of playing Destiny. Oh, that means high value target.
You can jump into your Honda HVT and roll around the map now twice as fast as ever since the Titan skating's gone.
Okay, so these changes will arrive with Season of the Drifter to get you ready for the changes in that season. They're enabling triple infamy for the final week of Season of the Forge. So starting on the 26th of February and ending on the 5th of March, Bungie say, are you looking to become a Dredgen and push the Drifter? Or maybe acquire a few weapons to round out your collection? Wins, losses, and bounties will all reward you with increased infamy throughout the week. Saying that, when you get to legend status in Gambit, you don't get any XP for losing in that last bracket before you can reset your infamy. So save your completed bounties. And if you're at that stage of getting, you're at legend, if you have got loads of completed bounties and then turn them in, that should help push you over that final hurdle for then being able to reset your rank. Respawn, over to you for the sandbox changes.
All right, so alongside the Gambit quality of life changes, our sandbox team will be fine-tuning some weapon archetypes to refresh the gameplay experience in Destiny 2. The following is a quick preview of some of the changes coming with the Destiny Update 2.2.0 with developer commentary from sandbox designer Victor Anderson. The first thing of note is the changes to the linear fusion rifles. These energy weapons have dominated Gambit for quite some time. First time came the sleeper simulant, then came the Queensbreaker. We've made them less forgiving so we can enjoy a change of pace. Linear fusion rifle aim assist values will receive an adjustment to reduce effectiveness at very long ranges. While Queensbreaker has high aim assist values by default, we discovered an issue where it was not honoring aim assist values that applied to other linear fusion rifles of the same archetype. This resulted in the Queensbreaker having over double the intended aim assist. Linear fusion rifles will receive a 10% damage increase in PvE to compensate for the above changes. Cool. Although, I mean, let's be honest, it's really not going to change anything, right? Linear fusion rifles are still going to be all over Gambit because they work. You can nerf them as much as you want, but until you take away that one-shot potential damage, there's not going to be a point, you know? And I don't want them to take away the potential one-shot, because most of them are exotics, right? Well, I mean, I don't know, maybe, because even if you notice the legendary one, legendary fusion rifles, lot of those, Crooked Fang, not just that one, but a lot of those can still one shot if you get a headshot. Now though, two shot body shot, but even at that long range with half the range and half the damage, they can still potentially one shot with a headshot cross map. I know this because I do this. So, I mean, there's still going to be a thing all over Gambit. It's just the best weapon to use. You get lots of ammo. You get one-shot kills. I mean, it doesn't matter if they take away the aim assist. It becomes a little more skilled at that point, I guess. But they're still going to be all over the place. Let's be real.
You say that with the aim assist, but the Crooked Fang still has quite a high aim assist, and they're not touching that one. So maybe that's the best one to use going forward.
I mean, you could say that, but I would still use the Queensbreaker, if I'm being honest, because the Queensbreaker is still more consistent, because it's not hard to line up a shot, right? Okay, yeah, it's got a lot of aim assist and whatnot like that. But at that range, I mean, you got all these people using snipers that have no aim assist or very little aim assist. It's the same principle. You just have to charge up a little bit first, right? So, I mean, you're right. It does have a lot of aim assist and it still might see some heavy play. But I would still use the Queensbreaker or the sleeper over that if I had the choice.
Okay.
So, moving on. Shotguns are receiving yet another nerf slash buff, right?
In the tweak. Season, I think they'd like to say tweak, not nerf.
Oh. Oh, but it is a
nerf. It's a technicality. It's a technicality.
No, I don't care. It's a nerf, right? They're not tweaking it. They're nerfing it into a... We'll get to that. Okay. So, shotguns. In this season of the Drifter, we're making a few changes to rapid-fire shotguns and the full auto perk. We're doing this for a few reasons. One of them being that the full auto perk feels far too important to shotguns in PvE, because it is. This perk effectively doubles the output of any given shotgun due to the rate of fire increase. While we believe it's important to have a few useful perks on our weapons, the efficiency of this was so impactful that rapid fire shotguns became the only shotguns worth considering in PvE. When the following change is released in Season of the Drifter, we hope you might be inspired to equip an aggressive shotgun or maybe even take a slug shotgun for a spin in a PvE activity. Shotguns will receive a damage multiplier in PvE activities, effectively doubling their damage. So we nerf it and then we double it? I'm sorry, what? Okay. The Legend of Acrius is an exception to this. Full auto rate of fire bonus for shotguns is now 10% of the speed, down from 100% of the fire rate. In addition, it no longer increases the shotgun pellet spread. See, that's a little bit of a buff right there, right? Because we all know those spreads get ridiculous. Default rate of fire values for have also shifted. I love that English. Good job.
That's directly from Bungie. That's just copied and pasted.
Is that really?
Yeah. Okay. I haven't made that up.
Let me read this again. Default rate of fire values for have also shifted. Aggressives are 55 RPMs up from 45 RPMs. Precision shotguns are now 70 RPMs, which has come up from 55 RPM. And lightweights are now 80 RPM. They were previously stated to be 90 RPM, but that was incorrect. Rapid fire, 140 RPM, down from 200 RPM. That's because before the rapid fire actually increased it by 100%, effectively doubling the rate of fire. They've toned that back down, hence the 140 instead of the 200. Also, reduced base damage for shotguns across the board to align with their new rates of fire on a per sub-archetype basis, right? So they've increased the rate of fire, decreased the damage. With the exception of the rapid fire ones, then they've severely decreased the rate of fire, right? So as if the Aikilos wasn't bad enough, right, that they nerfed Trench Barrel. Now they're nerfing the speed at which it can fire, right? I mean, these are boss killers. These are major killers. These are important. And it's not just the Aikilos. It's also the threat level, right? Two of the best shotguns, not even arguably, in the game, have just been nerfed yet again, right? And they're trying to justify by bringing other shotguns' rate of fire up a little bit. It's not going to matter, right? Because even if you bring up the other ones by 10 RPM, those two shotguns, it doesn't even matter if they're rapid fire, right? The Trench Barrel perk is still so strong that those are going to be considered over anything else, you know? And I don't even know why they're making these changes, these nerfs. I get from a mental standpoint, they're trying to make people use other shotguns. But it's just not going to be a thing. Because these two shotguns, the threat level and the Aikilos, are still the only weapons in the game that have Trench Barrel. So in almost any PvP activity, if you're going to use a shotgun, you're still going to use those. In PvP, Mindbender's Ambition is really good, right? Because you got that one-shot range potential, right? I personally use it. It's a great gun, and it's freaking beautiful to look at. I mean, let's be honest, right? You kill somebody, all those runes on the side of the shotgun light up. Ooh, it's so pretty.
But you say that, isn't it now with the shotguns, with this change, that you won't be able to one-shot somebody in the Crucible? Isn't it now that they've taken, you have to do at least two shots, and that's why the rapid fires have been taken down in PvP, so that a two-shot rapid fire won't kill somebody, it'll be like a three-shot or a four-shot. Is that what I'm understanding from this?
Potentially, yes. Now, those shotguns that have been right on the edge of one-shotting Guardians, yes, those will be affected. But the really powerful ones, like I said, the Mindbender's Ambition, or even the exotic shotgun called the Chaperone, those are still going to one-shot, right?
Chaperone, because it's a slug shotgun, though, isn't
it? Yeah, but I mean, even so, right? The Mindbender's Ambition has a really tight spread, and it's got like two perks for, you know, mapping Guardians, right? So those two shotguns, again, these changes haven't been made. This is just my experience from playing the game, right, in general. Those have been overpowered to kill a Guardian, right? So unless the nerf significantly impacts more than what these numbers right here say, those two shotguns, at the very least, are still going to one-shot at a distance, I believe, right? And then, of course, when you get close up, you're still going to have the Aikilos users and the threat level users that are going to, you know, one-shot you at close range. But that's just my prediction. They're making these changes to shotguns to try to give other shotguns some play. But in doing this, I think it's actually going to decrease shotgun usage, right? Because people that do use shotguns are going to be less likely to use it. Which, if you've ever been shotgun-aped in the Crucible, you're not going to mind that. Right, you're not going to mind people not using shotguns anymore. So it's going to be a little bit more skill based. You know, shooting people from a distance. Maybe you know, pulse rifle meta is going to stay here. Maybe it's going to shift a little bit to maybe a scout rifle. I mean, I don't know. Right, a lot of people are going to probably change that secondary from a shotgun to maybe a fusion rifle, I guess. Right, it remains to be seen. But
I think the average player will change from shotgun. They'll say they'll have it in their mind that it won't be able to do the job that it's been currently doing. But those shotgun apes will still be bouncing around the map trying to headshot you with a shotgun.
Well, either headshot you with a shotgun or turn a corner and snatch you with an Aikilos or a threat level. At close range, they're still going to one-shot you, right? So
yeah, this isn't going to make the professional shotgun players disappear. This is just going to make the average player think about what they're going to put in their loadout now.
Yeah, it's going to further spread that gap between the professionals and the casuals, I think.
Yeah, instead of being shotgunned, you know, one-hit shotgun, you're going to be shotgunned, throwing hammer shotgun, throwing knife shotgun, melee shotgun, you know, hand cannon. You know, you're going to be shotgunned and then finished off with something else, shotgun grenaded. You know, you're going to see different combinations of things instead of just, you know, the one-shot slide shotgunners.
No, that's what we're saying. The slide shotgunners can still one-shot you. You know, it's not that much of a damage nerf. You see what I'm saying? If they're close range, they're still going to one-shot you.
The follow stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're still going to get the shotguns with the sliding perk on them that if you slide and take a shot, it's going to get more damage. You know, you'll still get
more range. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I don't like shotgun apes. I'm a huge advocate against shotgun apes because I think it takes a lot of the skill out of the game to turn a corner, slide, and shoot, right? I mean, that to me is not a player versus player style. You know, it's, I don't know, maybe it's an honor thing, right? I don't feel it's honorable to slide a corner and slide and shoot somebody, right? It just, for me, it takes the skill out of it. It's like, wow, you can pull a trigger. Good for you, right? You don't even have to aim. You know, that's the thing about this. If you've ever seen these slide shotgunners, they rarely even aim down sights. You know, they slide, shoot, and keep going, you know? So it's just, it removes skill from the PvP aspect of the game. So if it does nerf these into oblivion in PvP, which I don't see doing, I just see it changing the skill gap, right? So the true shotgun apes are still going to be shotgun apes, but other people that used to be able to at least kind of compete with their own shotgun skills, they're just going to be outplayed now, you know? So for those people, yeah, I think the meta is going to shift more to probably a fusion rifle type of secondary. But in the end, PvP, these changes aren't going to be even noticed in PvP because, like I said, the threat level and the Aikilos are still way too strong, even with these double nerfs, and there's just no point, I think, using any other shotgun inside of PvE. Now, one of the last changes is to the one-eyed mask. Thank goodness, because you Titans suck, all right? The one-eyed mask. In various combat situations, the one-eyed mask has been too effective Yes, it has. And has become a non-choice exotic for Titans in PvP environments. After implementing the following changes, we believe the exotic will still be potent if used well, but there will be more opportunities to counter it. The first thing is the duration of Mark of Vengeance has been reduced from 15 seconds to 8. The way players refill health after each successful kill has changed. Before, it restored all of your health and the overshield refilled over time. Now, the health refills over time alongside the overshield. This should give a leg up when encountering situations where multiple people are fighting one person with a one-eyed mask equipped. Vengeance will no longer trigger for players while in their super, and this was making supers far too potent. Yes, it is ridiculous how good this exotic is. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm an advocate that an exotic should be an exotic. It should have amazing things happen because it's one of a kind. But its effectiveness, like they're saying, is way too strong. It triggers during supers. You can instantly get your health back along with a shield. It lasts for way too freaking long. And right here, they said right here, what was it at? This should give a leg up when encountering situations where multiple people are fighting one person with the one-eyed mask equipped. You notice they said leg up, not necessarily an advantage, right? Because it's still going to be really, really potent when fighting multiple people. And it's going to still be god tier when fighting one-on-one, right? So I still think a Titan is still going to use a one-eyed mask regardless.
Yeah, and didn't they do a similar, was it like the Wormhusk Crown or whatever, that Hunter exotic? That was not, it wasn't the one-eyed mask. It wasn't quite that powerful, but I know it had some similar
like perks. It had the health regen, yeah.
The health regen part of it. So yeah, again, I mean, it's not the same thing, but
it's not even close to the same thing.
It's Bungie doing what they're going to do. They're going to see, hey, you know, 95% of Titans, if they have this exotic, are going to use it. So let's, you know, make things a little more interesting.
Yeah, but let's look at the two, right? So the worm husk that you're talking about, what happens is when a hunter dodges, so he has to have his dodge, first of all. That's one thing. And the second thing is when he dodges, he gets a little bit of health, and then it begins his health regen, you see?
Yeah, which is what they've now done to the one, or what they're going to do to the one-eyed mask, isn't it?
No, it's not, because the one-eyed mask gets health regen and shield regen.
And an overshield, yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of like, in my eyes, it makes sense that that's sort of the Titan version of, you know, sort of this hunter exotic. Because, like, you have a hunter, he's fast, he's speedy, he gets his health back, he can run away and dodge from you. The Titan, Titans can't dodge. I can't spin away from you. I can't lunge into the corner.
You're comparing apples to oranges. You're comparing apples to oranges because the hunter has to have their dodge, and it only gives a little bit of health and starts health regen. The one-eyed mask gives tracking, right? Because the person that shot you, now you know where they are. It gives health regen,
the shield,
and the health. Overshield regen. It gives extra damage to the person that killed you.
Right. I'm not saying it's not too powerful, because I mean, definitely, like, the moment it came out is like that was the number one thing on my wish list, because I just looked at the perks on it, going, this is the first thing they're going to touch because it's just stupidly powerful. But I appreciate Bungie putting things like this into the game and saying, let's see what happens. You know, let's give you this stupidly powerful exotic. Yeah, we may have to tweak it and tune it over time, but I appreciate you giving me something powerful to play with, and I got to use it. Like when I was running with Knight, we were playing Crimson Doubles. Right. We both had the one-eyed mask on because it's like, you know, it was a non-choice. I mean, usually if I'm in the Crucible for the most part running, you know, quick play, I'm often running Syntheseps because I just love reaching out and punching somebody. Right. But yeah, for doubles, it's like you could not use one on a mask if you had it. It's just too good an armor piece to use.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna bring in something like the one-eyed mask, you need to bring in something for, let's say, as an example, for the warlock, right? Bring in an exotic that will enable the self-revive, right? Since it got removed from our subclass, maybe you can give an exotic that'll give back that perk.
Yeah, using like a chest piece subclass or something. Yeah.
Yeah. While using the Dawn Blade, if you're killed in combat, you have 5 seconds to press the A button to revive once every, I don't know, 2 minutes, 60, something, right? Yes, there needs to be a cooldown on it, obviously, but to just give us an exotic of some kind that would give us, you know, a rebirth, right?
Or it
that
uses way a chunk of your super. You know, it uses like a quarter of your super. So if you've built up a quarter of your super, you get killed, you can self-res at that point, but it takes away that quarter of your super. So yeah, it's a trading system.
Anything, honestly, right? And because, I mean, we got to have some kind of a defense, right? So when the Titan inevitably one-shots you, whether it's running around the corner and just one-shot meleeing you, or comes around with the one-eyed mask, well, he's got the health, the overshield, and the extra damage, and just decimates you, well, now the Warlock can boop, pop right back into existence to try to get his revenge for being a one-shot, right? So, I mean, something needs to balance it a little bit. Then bringing down the one-eyed mask is still going to make it ridiculously powerful. So you need to give the other two classes an exotic that can bring them up to that level. That might counter somehow them being one-shot all the damn time. You know what I mean?
The problem with the exotics still, too, is, you know, getting the exotics. Because I know, like, I know Night Demon was struggling to get the one-eyed mask for the longest time. It just would not drop. I know a lot of folks, you know, still don't have, you know, many or very few of the new exotics. It's like, you know, some of these things that you can have, like you're talking about the Ikelo shotgun and the threat level. You know, I almost wonder, like, what percentage of players have these weapons? I mean, you know, the Ikelos is totally RNG-based. You could have gotten one round of Escalation Protocol. You could have run 60-plus like I had to finally drop it. And there are some folks who have run it similar numbers of times and still haven't had it drop. You know, the threat level, again, you've got to go do raids. You got to get to drop through there. It's like, you know, there's some of these guns where I almost wonder what percentage of the community has these guns to use. And yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a non-zero number, but is, you know, 5%, 10%, just like the exotics, like how many folks have these exotics to even use? But I do agree with you. The Warlocks need something. I mean, they've got the, you know, the ability to regen their health and get the overshield, but it's almost like, you know, it's like, hold on guys, let me call timeout and stand here. And put this, you know, draw a circle on the ground so I can stand in the circle. But don't shoot me while I'm doing this. It's like you've got the perk, but it's so, you know, it's like the Titan wall. It's like you have to stand here and sort of do nothing else and get murdered while you're trying to throw this thing down. They need something to bring that up. It's like they've got this, you know, inherent perk to them, but it's not as useful in PvP at all. PvE, absolutely. But PvP, it's like, you know, a kid trying to call timeout in the middle of a game of tag and being tagged. It's not going to work.
Okay. I'm trying to follow your reasoning there, but you kind of lost me partway through, man.
Warlocks need some help. That's all we're trying to say.
I mean, I'd like to see Foe Tracer brought up for the Hunter, because that is a quite an equivalent to the One-Eyed Mask for the Titan. You've still got the tracking on it, and you do the extra damage. But I don't think you do the extra damage to... I don't know where it pinpoints that extra damage. I think you have to be out of... The character has to be out of their shield for you to do the extra damage, don't you? No?
Don't ask the Hunter about the Hunter exotics. He has no idea.
I know. I'm just testing him.
The foe tracker. You're asking me about exotics that nobody ever uses, right? Yeah. So just give me a second. I know that it's got something called Relentless Tracker, right?
You say nobody uses, but it's probably the one that's being used in comp all the time, and you just don't know about it.
The Relentless Tracker.
The Worm Husk is the one that's being used in comp most of the time.
Yeah, the Relentless Tracker perk will give you, it'll visually mark your targeted enemies and deal more damage to low health marked enemies. So it'll mark them and deal more damage if they're low health, but it won't necessarily help you on a one-on-one encounter.
But I think that's what it needs. Yeah.
Bring that up and give you either, when you mark the enemy, maybe it starts your health or shield regen, bring it up to the level of the one-eyed mask. You either give it a new perk or have it apply to say, if you've marked somebody, deal more damage overall, period.
Yeah, but that's so stupid. It deals more damage to low health marked enemies. It's basically an execution exotic, right? I don't want to deal more damage to low health because they're low health. The next shot's going to kill them anyway. I want to do more damage to full health people. Let's say the foe tracer was changed to do extra damage to opponents that have overshields, right? Get rid of that overshield faster. You see what I'm saying? And that way you can just one or two shot them. Yeah, that to me would make more sense. Not an execution. Oh, guess what? You can do more damage if they're almost dead. The hell's the point of that? You know? Congratulations. You can do the same thing everybody else without the foe tracer can do. Huzzah! Right? That's stupid. You know, the tracking is okay, right? But the execution is not okay. That's why nobody uses it, man. Everybody uses the worm husk to keep themselves alive. You know, I mean, I say everybody. There's other people out there that use other things, right? But for the most part, if you're a hunter, you're going to be using the worm husk. That way, if you get shot, you dodge, roll out of the way, you get your health back, you re-engage, you see? But, foe tracer, no. I don't see that being a thing. It's not a good exotic, in my opinion, as a hunter, right? There's so many way better options out there. Like, if you're going to be using the Void subclass, you're using the Gwinsen Vest. If you're using the Arc subclass, you're using the Radiant Flux, right? If you're using the Fire subclass, eh.
I mean, your gauntlets to throw out extra knives when you hit something.
It doesn't matter in PvP. The knives do not even melee damage, man. They do hardly anything. At least you can two-shot melee somebody, right? You can throw two knives and hit the same person. It won't kill them. The knives are pointless. Now, if you see them coming, right, you can throw knives while you're running at them and then melee them. But in that situation, why not just shoot them and melee them, right? So I don't see a whole lot of point in that, you know? No. As far as a solo class hunter goes, solo subclass hunter goes, they definitely, the only option they really have in PvP is the Worm Husk. So, okay. Whatever. That's the end of my rant. That's the end of my section.
I will link a video by Cool Guy in the link section where he goes over the sandbox changes and explains some of the shotgun things in a little bit better.
I'm sure once the patch drops, we're going to see a stream of videos from different folks of actually, you know, doing all the testing in the private matches of Crucible, saying, you know, how does it actually affect the shotgun play? Which shotguns are, you know, being brought up because of the nerfs or other things? So I'm looking forward to see, just where the numbers fall out, because Bungie, you know, they didn't really give us good numbers saying, hey, you know, this did 80 damage before, now it's going to do 75 damage. It's, you know, we've buffed this, we've tweaked this, we've changed this, so. It'll be interesting to see where those numbers actually fall and what the new popular shotgun becomes, just because of how things play out. There's always something that emerges from these changes, and I think that's why they do them. They want something else too, whether they have something in mind or just saying, hey, let's roll the dice and let's change the meta up somewhat. Before we move on to the resolved issues, I was, you know, looking through the shotgun perks. You know, they're making some real changes, saying, hey, in PvE we're going to do this, and in PvP we're going to do this. Is this the first big time they've made? I mean, I know they've done a little bit of tweaking, but this seems like the first big thing where they've said, hey, we're going to actually make these two changes across the different game modes and actually have them affect the different game modes. So it's not like we're going to take, you know, we're going to nerf shotguns entirely into Oblivion.
They've done the same thing with fusion rifles, both in Gambit, in PvP, and in PvE, right, as an example.
They did it with shotguns previously, didn't they? They brought them up in PvE. Remember when nobody used them in, I think it was year one.
Yeah.
And then they gave them like 100% damage buff in PvE and really brought them back up into the meta.
Yeah. But I think they have done it before. They also did it with fusion rifles. They made different tweaks depending on the game mode that you were in. So this isn't the first time that they've done this type of tweaking. They did it with fusion rifles and they did it with shotguns before. But at least now they're getting better at it. Instead of like D1, everybody remembers, oh, this gun is good, let's nerf it into Oblivion.
With that, with Destiny 1, I think with the architecture of how they built the game, they couldn't just nerf individual guns, and they couldn't nerf individual guns in PvE separately from PvP. So when they built Destiny 2, they had that in mind, that they could then take things apart and actually, you know, make something separate in a separate area. So I think that's why we've now got different balances in different areas. They still need to be tweaked every now and then, but they're able to do it a lot better than they were in Destiny 1.
Yeah. And I remember seeing, and I think that's what I'm thinking about, is Destiny 1, sort of being an all or nothing change. And I remember them saying, I don't know if it was in a ride along or in one of the interviews or live streams, somewhere, them saying, making the point you just made, Night Deep, and saying, you know, we want to be able to, you know, to make some changes. One, to do, you know, to do fixes and say, hey, you know, if we have another, you know, well, at that point, there was no Prometheus lens bug, but say, hey, if we have one gun, instead of, you know, canceling trials for the week, or instead of, you know, taking this content out of the game entirely, or removing a gun, removing an armor piece, you know, we want to be able to make some smaller changes. So I think that's good. It could be good going forward that they can make these changes to, you know, weapon types and armor pieces without having to be like, oh, we've made this entire class of gun now useless. Yeah, maybe I'm just thinking back to D1 and thinking this might be the first big time they've done it.
Yeah,
but it's definitely a good change, because, it's definitely a nice change overall. And you're right on that. I think back, there were no shotguns in the beginning at all, and now they've, you know, trying to balance those out. But it's nice to be able to see these changes across the different game modes, and not just have it be all or nothing.
Yeah.
So, shall we move on to Resolved Issues Preview Part 2? So, following from the conversation last week, where we detailed what they detailed from the 12, there are some more player-impacting issues that they expect to be resolved in Update 2.2.0 in early March. So, Mint Condition Triumph. The Mint Condition Triumph is not unlocking. The Forged in Fire Triumph is not unlocking. The Master Smith Triumph is not updating for rare research frames completions. Calculated Trajectory Triumph and Triumph Medal do not trigger in Iron Banner. The Eternal Return Emblem is not updating each player's conquest of Dol Incarnate in the Dreaming City. Senior Recruiter Emblem is not updating for Refer a Friend completions. The Black Armory Devotee Bounty does not progress when using non-frame Black Armory weapons. And Relics of the Golden Age. So this is the Sturm quest. They're going to resolve the issue in Update 2.2.0, which has caused confusion. Currently, one of the steps in the quest directs players to decrypt 5 legendary engrams and 1 exotic engram. In Update 2.2.0, this quest description will update to direct players to pick up these engrams, which aligns with Year 2 world drops with their engram behavior. Because, to set the correct expectations, here are some special cases that players should be aware when completing this step. So Prime Engrams do not count towards this quest step. Vendor Rank Up rewards and Crypt Art Purchases Engrams do not count towards this quest step. Guess what? Fated Engrams do not count towards this quest step. And Engrams left in activities that are recovered to the Postmaster do not count towards this in the quest step. So the Year 1 style legendary exotic engrams that slot into players' inventories and require manual decryption do not count towards this quest step either. These are very rare, but they're still available from some sources. So that's what they're going to fix. So if you have any issues with the Sturm quest, that's what they're going to do for you. So this is new players coming, you know, Forsaken or over Christmas. If you're trying to do a quest that's popped up, and I think it starts on Nessus with Failsafe. And I've again linked a quest steps video from More Console. We're going to link the help forums if anybody wants to have a look in that, and the update page, because this would keep an eye on the update page if you need to find out any more information about that. And they're going to come up with a third and final resolution issue preview next week in the 12. So we'll go over that and let people know. So another couple of things that have popped up on Twitter this week, after this week Bungie went live from DMG and Cosmo addressing some of the concerns. So this is one that Parody loves. Sent me a picture of this one. Update 2.2.0 will have some nice quality of life fixes. So they're going to fix an issue where transferring items using Destiny apps would constantly re-trigger Triumph notifications. So when you've got all those banners popping up along the bottom of your screen saying that you'd done all the lost sectors on Nessus or Io or Mercury, or you'd found all the chests and things, that's going away.
The number of lost sectors I have found in the tower. Let me tell you, I have found hundreds of lost sectors in the tower. I don't know where any of them are, but I have found them. So I am
You should
thrilled.
Stop transferring when you're in the tower and just use the vault.
Nobody wants to use the vault. It's there. They put it in the game, and then immediately I've forgotten all about the fact you can walk into it and use it. Yeah,
the beautiful. The only thing that I care about the vault is the fact that there's never enough slots. No. That's all I care about. Oh, great. They increased it to 500 slots. Don't get me wrong. It was a great increase, but it's still not enough. I can't tell you how many games I've played where there's no such thing as a vault limit, right? It's just, why do you limit yourselves on the vault space? You have all these guns in the game. They were happy about, you have this many, I don't know, hundreds of thousands or millions of combos to get for your weapons. Great. Do we have that many slots? Ha! No.
Don't get me started on that.
I am unfamiliar with this problem. I've got loads of vault space before the patch, and I've got loads of vault space after the
patch. We're not talking to you about this. Anyway, moving on to what DMG says. So next week, they'll have more information to show you for Season of the Drifter. So again, that'll be in the 12. We'll cover that. And more patch notes. So they're going to preview some of the patch notes that are coming. And the R&D Triumph seals will not be addressed with Update 2.2.0, but the team is currently looking into it.
And then Cosmo on Twitter went ahead and teased that Season of the Drifter is coming, info is coming next week, and they're going to have some info on pinnacle weapons. They didn't say new, they said pinnacle weapons. So maybe there'll be changes to how you acquire those, or maybe there will be new ones. We don't know yet. It'll be in next week's 12. Again, we'll link This Week at Bungie for the 21st of February, Cosmo's Twitter and DMG's Twitter, because it's helpful if somebody does follow them and find out this information, because otherwise you get left behind.
Right. And also, you know, talking about that, right? So I lost my train of thought.
Because you're so excited about the,
oh, no,
the
that's
next
what it
change
was.
That are
no,
coming to Hunters.
That's what it was. No, shut up. Anyway, no, it's the lack of knowledge. Why are they being so hush-hush about this, right? This is kind of what's scaring me. They're like, not every other expansion, right? They're like, oh, you're going to get this, and you're going to get this, and there might be a new exotic on the way, and, you know these things are happening. They've given all these hints and these playful little teasers and this and that and the other, but not for Season of the Drifter, you know?
Not
what the hell?
Every other expansion. Black Armory wasn't detailed until November 27th, which was about a week before Season 5 started.
Okay.
I don't remember if it was Houndish or which of the 57 videos I've watched this week, but yeah, they were saying, you know, Black Armory, we really didn't know much about it until about a week before. So they're saying,
I'm
going
to say it was the Houndish video, because I was just about to say, you watched the same video that I did.
Right.
Yeah. He was saying, you know, before we had a lot more information, but they were saying, you know, Black Armory, it was about a week before we actually got real hard information on what's going on. And, you know, so they're saying, hey, probably about a week before is when we'll get our information. So coming up this week, we should get some actual hard data on this. And maybe because it's still working on, maybe because they're not ready to reveal it yet. Maybe Bungie's new plan is, hey, about a week before we tell you all this, so we don't. I think there's also a problem to the hype train of, okay, 3 months down the road, a month down the road, this is coming. We're hyping. It gets here. And you're like, okay, this is it.
You're underwhelmed.
I mean, you know, it's like seeing a movie trailer for a year before the movie comes out, and you're like, oh my God, the movie's finally here. I got to go see it. It's like, no matter how amazing that movie is, it's never going to be as good as, you know, the year of hype building into it. So I sort of appreciate the, we're not going to hype this, because, I mean, they were hyping the crap out of everything. It's like, you know, this is an amazing thing. You know, the Antius Ward, you can slide and push things back at people and deflect things. I'm like, no, nobody does that.
I fear change.
But seriously, Mr. Hunter, are you thrilled? Are you not entertained that you can now see your entire cloak in the 2.2.0 update? Were you even bothered that you couldn't see your whole cloak before?
Honestly, no. I'm sorry.
So you're not beside yourself that you can now apparently see your whole cloak?
No,
I didn't realize, because again, I don't play enough Hunter.
Once upon a time, you know, maybe I complained about it, but I mean, if I did, that was a long time ago, and it was probably just a one-off, because I guess as a Hunter, you just get used to equipping it to see what it looks like, you know? So we had an email response from one of our listeners, and they said exactly this. Says, hey guys, I'm a fellow Destiny 2 player, and I was wondering if you could discuss loot and the best strategy to gain it. After Forsaken, the transition from 550 to 610 power to play Black Armory is an absolute pain. I'd like to know your opinion on this. Honestly, I've tried getting good loot, even with the prime buff, still lacking good Ingrams. If you could help me and those like me out, I'm sure we'd all be appreciative of it. Thank you for reading, XX Lord Fluff XX, Xbox Live listener. So, rather than Lord... Okay, that's what you wrote. So, honestly, the best thing you have to do is play three characters. It doesn't even matter if you only use one of them. Make three characters, right? Start with your highest character for that week. Do all the stuff. Jump to the next character. Do all the stuff. Jump to the next character. Do all the stuff. And when I say do all the stuff, I mean get your Prime Ingrams for that week. Do your Crucible Prime Ingrams. Do your PvP Prime Ingrams. Prime Ingrams. Blah. Do your anything you can get a powerful Ingram from that week on that character, do. Then swap to the second character.
I think you're kind of, stuff. You are jumping ahead a little bit. You're going a bit too far.
But that's really the only thing that's important. If you just want the power level, you know.
But the thing is, I didn't want to leave Lord Fluff waiting until this podcast came out. So I went and had a look and emailed him all the different things that he could do.
And like you were saying, if he wants to level up faster, he's going to have to do it with three characters. And to get those up to level 50, it's probably best to get a Fireteam Medallion from Eververse, if he can, for the fast XP, and then just wander around the EDZ and jump into doing the public events and maybe double dipping into those public events. I will link a video in the show notes, but you can retransmap back into the same public event that you've just completed, and there is a chance that you may get another public event that is working at the same time, so you can get double XP a little bit quicker. But saying that, on the EDZ, you can jump from like one public event to another quite easily and quite quickly, and there's quite a lot of people that will be doing similar things. So you need to get your characters up to level 50, because yes, you can play through the campaign and level them up to level 50, but some of the campaign missions do reward you higher tier drops. So if you've already power leveled your characters to 50 using the XP boost, you then have a chance at then getting extra drops as you're going through. Like you were saying with the prime engrams, going through and doing all your different daily resets, you can do that as well. But you like you said, you start with a main character and you work through that main character throughout the week. You then progress your second character and do all the prime engrams on that, or the, what are they called? They're not prime engrams. They are
powerful engrams.
Powerful engrams. Powerful engrams for that character. But then again, I'll link it in the show notes. DestinyResets.net does a track of what daily resets come up for you to get a powerful engram. So I think it's like every 3 or 4 days, there'll be a reset of like the daily crucible, the daily gambit, the daily story mission. So even though the flashpoint story mission you may have completed at the beginning of the week, 4 days later or 3 days later, I can't remember when it is, it rotates out and you can then do another powerful engram on that planet, even if you have done all the public events on there and got that engram. So it's worth keeping an eye and going back to your characters, because with that, say you've already done your main character, you're halfway through your second character, you may be able to then go back and get another powerful engram to drop on your main character. And yeah, you do have, there is a chance that it may be a weapon that you don't necessarily need at that power level, but it's a 50-50 chance that you're going to get a weapon or you're going to get a piece of armor. So it's worth taking the chance if you want to level up faster to go back and do those individually. And then once you've got to that point in the week where you're checking back on your main character and your second character and you're working on your third character, and then the next reset, you can then work backwards from that third character back to your main character. So keep a check on vendors, because in between power jumps, as well as you moving up on light, if you're only missing one or two items, you might be able to then look at the vendors and see if their items would be high enough to power jump you, like those extra one or two light. Also in your collections, you can do the same, but I think the collections, it's going to be whatever you pull out, you can pull out exotics or year one weapons that are fixed in a roll, and the same with armor. But again, that would be 20 light levels lower than what you are. But if those 20 light levels lower than what you are will boost your character by a couple of points if you infuse that, or even if you wear that item by buying it back out of your inventory, because I think it's only glimmer and shards that it takes to get out most of the items. That will then help boost you up. And probably the best thing to do is don't infuse anything until you've actually got to the point of near enough getting to 630, 640, because there's no point in wasting your shards. There's no point in wasting your enhancement cores, because those things are precious. If you can, whilst Zer's around, go and buy the second and third exotics from him, like the armor that you can get for, say, your second and your third character on your main character, because those light, that will drop at roughly around the same light as your main character. But then you can actually put those onto your second and third characters, which you wouldn't be able to do if you bought them on your second and third characters, because that light would be lower than what it currently is for your main. But it seems to work the other way around. The only thing is, if you wanted to try and do that out of your collections, if your main character tries to buy, say your main is a Titan, it wouldn't then be able to pull out a hunter or a warlock armor piece to then infuse up. It just won't allow you to do that. So keep that in mind. That's why Xur's there to kind of help give you a boost. Plus, you can also try and do the, if you've got enough shards, he does a fated engram that could again drop you even a third or fourth piece of armor that you can get that week. Last Wish raid or the Scourge of the Past raid, I haven't done either, and I didn't do any to get up to 650. But again, you can do those. LFG is probably the best bet for those, or find a clan that's actually doing raids. You might find somebody that wants to help carry you through. There are a lot of LFG sites. The 100.io, I recommend. I met my clan on there. And there's the Xbox app, if you're on Xbox. There's an LFG part to the dashboard that you can go and search for people who are playing. And they're quite reasonable, the people that are on there, because they're quite genuine. Just look out for the tags that, you know, you can spot somebody that's not actually interested in helping you by looking at those tags. The Shattered Throne will also give you high drops. So if you can go into that, there's also that you could LFG, or you can even solo the first part. There are a couple of maps out there to do the first encounter at least. If you take your time and just slowly burn down those enemies, just follow the map around and unlock the doors. So you can kind of do that every 3 weeks and earn those higher value items. The Ace of Spades and the Chaperone exotics are capped at around 600 power level. So you could do those to kind of boost you up to that. The Last Word, the Malfeasance, the Jotun, the Wishender, the Izanami's Burden, and Le Monarch, they all drop up to 650. So if you're kind of working through the story and then progressing parts of that, that may help, you know, help you get past different points in the quest steps for those. So keep an eye on those, because you can do those as you're working through other things. Events like Crimson Days and Festival of the Lost, they offer highlight level weapons as rewards. You've also got the pinnacle rewards like Breakneck Auto Rifle, the Mountaintop Grenade Launcher, and the Loaded Quest Infusion Rifle. And they drop at highlight. Again, with those, you can complete those quests. And the same with the exotic quests. You can leave those items at the vendor. So if, for instance, you've got like a primary weapon that is at your max level and you go to that vendor and it's the same level, don't pull it out. Wait until you've then powered through and got a few more prime engrams and a few more powerful engrams and leveled yourself up, then go back. And if you know that item's there, you can pick it up from, say, the Drifter with the Last Word, and that item will have gone up in light. You can keep checking on it as and when. You don't necessarily have to grab those items when they pop up. You can leave them and let the light grow. Again, two Nightfall rewards can be done. You can do a normal run, and then you can do a high score, which I think is 100,000. There are people that run those every couple of days, you know, then you'll find them on LFG. Find a good friend, you can go in and do it two people. At least the main Nightfall, you don't have to rush. You know, put a burn on, put heavy on, put grenades on. Do what you need to do to kind of just get that higher reward. Parody, have you got anything that you can think of?
A couple things I was thinking of is if you haven't done the quest from Zavala and Shax and all those folks of the, you know, go play a Gambit match, go play a Crucible match in your full armor set, those will give you higher power drops. And also, you know, there's a guy on YouTube and Twitch, Ebontis, Ebontis, who posts a lot of videos on solo things. So even if you play at odd times and your friends aren't on, or if you're just more of a solo player, he posts a lot of good videos on how to solo the Shattered Throne or in the Nightfalls. So even if you don't have folks to go in with, you can jump in and do those alone and have some good success with them. Yeah, so the biggest part of the game too is just go play something you enjoy. If you don't enjoy getting into Crucible, then don't sit and grind your way through Crucible. I mean, even if, you know, if it's double or triple Valor that weekend, maybe jump in and go enjoy yourself. But like coming up here on Tuesday, we've got the triple infamy for Gambit. So, you know, go grind yourself through some Gambit this week, enjoy some of those changes. And if nothing else, you're going to get more rewards, because as you're getting that triple infamy going up, every time you increase a rank level, you're going to get some kind of package and some kind of drop. And then when you max it out, you'll get a nice power level drop from it. So if you play a bunch of Gambit this week, you could get through that progression a couple of times, because you can do it three times faster. But yeah, just go have fun with the game, because at the end of the day, it's a game. You know, being at 650 light level is not the most important thing in the world. I took my leisurely time to it. to get there. I know some folks want to get there like day one because they want to be raid ready and jump in, but I've got one character at 650. The two others are at like 647, 648 because I'm missing that one last final piece. And really, you know, come Season of the Drifter, it now goes to 700. So if you're not at 650, it's just not that big a deal. You know, go play the game you enjoy. If you want to be that, you know, absolutely top tier, you know, maxed out light level, great. But then also, what are you chasing for the next couple months while you're waiting for the new season to come out? So, you know, play the game you want to play. Have fun with it. Don't be so worried about, oh, I have to be 650. I have to be 650. Because really, I mean, the raids are, you know, light level specific. The Iron Banner is light level specific. But even then, it's not that big a drop. If you're 640 or 645 or above, you're not going to notice a huge difference. Now, if you're going to a 650 raid at 620, you're going to struggle. But if you're going in, you know, within 10 or 15 points of that light level requirement, you're going to do just fine.
I think the thing is with the rank up packages, if it's your first time through Crucible or your first time through Gambit, those rank up packages that you get for each increment, those will give you light level required power. So you'll get a drop of an armor piece or a weapon. So if you enjoy doing those, go and do those. So we've been joined by Frosty from our clan, who runs a solo hunter, and you've come on to explain what you've done. Explain how you've got to 650 and how long it's taken you and things like that. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, I am Frosty. I am one of the main females in our clan. I'm also an admin, and I run a hunter main.
So how did you find the grind to 650? Because I know, you know, as we said, you only play the one hunter. You don't have a second or third character to bounce around between. Like, did you find this like a harder grind to get to 650 than others? And how did you get there?
Well, this time around, I honestly think that I got to 650 a lot faster than previous rank ups. And honestly, I just didn't concentrate on it. And I just let it happen because to me, it's not really a grind. Because I refuse to do that. But, you know, getting into things that I didn't normally enjoy playing before, like I used to not like Crucible at all. But now I will go in there and I'll, you know, do my best because now I don't suck as much. Yeah, doing the powerful gear activities, which Night Demon has always suggested, is definitely the way to go.
So how did you find the grind from the beginning of the Forsaken, really? Because we went from a 380 light or 385 light up to 600. How long did it take you? And were you bothered about kind of progressing really fast? Did you just do the things that you enjoyed?
Honestly, I have no idea how long it took me. I know in reference, if I go with my grind happy counterpart, Detrick, I definitely moved up faster than he did, even though he has three characters, which I'm not sure how that happened. Yeah, I mainly do things that I enjoy. I'm not really a grinder.
Do you find that you get more exotics and more prime engrams to drop just running the one character than, say, Detrick does with his three?
You know, he's always complaining that I get things that he doesn't, so I mean, I'm not sure exactly how many exotics have dropped for me, but, you know, since I only have the one character, it's just like a, hey, I got an exotic, not a, darn it, I need this one, or I need this one. So, yeah, I mean, I guess because I haven't ever really leveled up two other characters, it's not like, it's just like a, hey, this is what I got.
Okay. So with your exotics that have dropped, have you had multiple drops of the same exotic, say like two shards of Galanor, two Guizhen vests and things like that? Have you had things like that pop up?
No, actually, I don't think I've ever gotten anything duplicated.
Okay.
I wonder if we've cracked the code on duplicates. Just play one character or have one class and then it doesn't give you duplicates of that same thing over and over again.
Well, that does not count for the Edge of Darkness or whatever.
The Edge Transit?
The Edge Transit?
Yes, the Edge
Transit. You build your house of Edge Transits that you pray to every morning on your Shrine of Edge Transits, and you sit on your Edge Transit chair? You get your Edge Transit table with your Edge Transit utensils?
Yes, you can build all of that stuff with all of the Edge Transits that you get.
I understand it's extremely difficult for new players to come in and find out the answers to these questions. I mean, most of the stuff's buried on YouTube or in Reddit posts due to a lot of the community moving past the initial steps. So for new players coming in at Christmas or at the beginning of Forsaken, that information's not readily available for you to kind of help power level and grind to get to 650 now, or even get into the forges at 610. So yeah, it's completely understandable. Again, this is adding to the point that we made in our previous podcast, that the information is too spread out as well, whether they'll drop something into the TWAB, or there'll be a post on Reddit from Bungie or a tweet from Bungie, and it will give you a subtle hint to how to do this and how to do that. But unless somebody's collating all that information, it's not very helpful for the normal Destiny player. It needs to be centralized by Bungie, as I think we said previously. And maybe like they need to have a quick step guide on how to get into Destiny, how to level up the mechanisms and the game. You know, just the basic stuff to help people that are constantly coming into the game and seeing it for the first time. It also needs to be updated and revised for every season, because everything is constantly evolving in this game. And if you want to keep getting new players in without that daunting task of what the hell are these enhancement cores? What the hell are these shards? What the hell is Glimmer for? I don't understand why there aren't, there isn't a kind of help page on Bungie just to say this would be a quick explanation guide of how to get into the game. They want more people to recommend a friend, and you get a free sparrow if you're an existing player, and your friend gets a sparrow, you get a shader, you get an emblem, all this wonderful stuff, but there's nothing to kind of help those guardians get into the game. And I think it needs to be highlighted somewhere, which is one of the main reasons why we've decided to have a chat about it this week.
You know, this is a more, I guess, mature-ish game, because it doesn't have like the little hints that pop up for you on other games that, oh, do this to do this, you know. It kind of just throws you in there, and it's basically, oh, just do the campaign.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, even if you search for how to level up quickly in Destiny, you know, you'll find a video from like 6 months ago that isn't relevant now, or you'll find a post on Reddit from 6 months ago that isn't relevant now. That's, I think, the issue that new players are having, that they need to kind of be helped every step of the way with the new seasons changing and how to get into it and how to level. So Bungie have responded to a Reddit post actually in this past week regarding leveling up. It should have been in the TWAB, but they'd probably post it this week. Somebody has asked, I haven't even done any of the Black Armory yet, and I'm barely 600 power level. And Bungie responded with, we'll have some info next week on how to power up and quickly jump right into the new annual pass content. So it's something they're aware of, and it's something they're going to address. But it would have been nice in the last couple of weeks for them to actually have said something like this. You know, I know they did it for Season of the Forge, that they explained that, I think it was, Prime Engrams would drop rapidly higher light to help you boost to get to 600. So that when you've got to 600, it would then slow down to match what everybody else was actually doing for light. So I think they'll probably do that again, where they'll get to say, if you're below 650, anything that you get power engrams and prime engrams and exotics will really significantly boost your light up, like by 10 levels, until you hit that cap where everybody else started off. And then it will start slowly incrementing you up to 700 for Joker's Wild. Anybody else got anything else that they could add to that?
Well, I'm wondering if it wouldn't irritate people that, like, they've been doing all this stuff, and then somebody who's new comes in and says, oh, here you go. You know, you get that immediate jump boost when everybody else has been, like, you know, taking forever just to get to that point.
Yeah, but you say that, but everybody else has been doing the stuff and enjoying the game, relatively speaking, enjoying the game, to grind to that level. So if somebody wants to come in at, say, 650 with the new Joker's Wild, I don't see that there's an issue with that. You know, they're going to have to go and play the past stuff if they want to learn about the game, because if you're being thrown in at 650 for Joker's Wild to then go off and do the new stuff, it's going to be a bit hard again
for somebody to understand all the mechanics of the game unless they've played through it and they've done the infusing, they've done the grinding, and they've done Nightfalls. They understand what the Gambit modes are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I can understand people's frustration and I can understand people not wanting others to come in at that level. But I think it would be quite nice for somebody to come in at that light level. But again,
yeah, I wouldn't begrudge them that. I'm just saying that, you know, there's people out there that are probably, you know, like, hey, kind of like a job where somebody comes in at the amount that you're making and you're not getting a raise.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's always going to be the problem, because even then, you know, you've got the folks who can play, you know, 80 hours a week that are streaming and you basically do this as a job or as a, you know, hobby job, and they're coming home every night putting in their 6 hours of Destiny. And you've got the folks who are like, yeah, I can get on for, you know, an hour or two on the weekends around my kids, around my life. And, you know, it's interesting having a game where you can devote your life to it and make it a lifestyle, or you can sort of dip it and dip out. And I think I was talking to Pan, and I think he was like, your ideal play session is something like, you know, you can either play for 2 hours or 16 hours. Like, there really is, it's like, it's no middle ground. It's like, you either jump in and just say, I'm going to go, you know, knock out my three strikes for the day and be off, or I'm on for the entire day because there's this and there's this. But there is so much to do.
Yeah. I mean, prior to this podcast, I played some Iron Banner for about 3-4 hours. I haven't had anything exciting drop today, but I've just enjoyed playing the game.
Yeah, well, at this point, too, I'm sure you've got every single Iron Banner weapon roll, armor set, armor piece. You know, you're sort of probably sort of the point now where there's sort of nothing left to drop in Iron Banner, but it's a fun game mode. It's like, play it, enjoy it, hang out with your friends, go add to those piles of tokens you can bring in the next season, which, as a reminder, turn in, of course, you may not hear this before Iron Banner ends, turn in your Iron Banner bounties because they're going to take them away from you. You can't keep them for next season.
Mm.
But those tokens you have sitting in your vault, keep those around. I've got like 1,500 of those things because, again, there's nothing I need from Iron Banner anymore because I enjoy playing it. I played a ton of it. But keep those tokens because those you can turn in next season for whatever the new Iron Banner stuff's going to be.
Hopefully new game modes.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the new Gambit game mode that they keep mentioning and rumbling about. I'm really curious what it's going to be, if it's going to be a full-on new game mode or just sort of a new way to play, you know, the Gambit we have. Because it's such an interesting, like, I like the mechanic behind it. I like the idea of the PvE and PvP behind it. I would love to see that built out in some way.
What are you guys' opinions on how Destiny has implemented leveling up since Forsaken, basically, with changing it to that you have to do those dailies and you do those weeklies for your powerful drops? Do you enjoy that? Is it a good way of it working? Or would you rather do what we had in Destiny 1, where you just play the game and drops would happen, but those items would drop higher light for you? Do you prefer Destiny 2, or do you prefer Destiny 1, or a mixture of something in between?
Well, I like the aspect of, you know, going in and because I'm a list person, so I like being able to go, okay, I checked this off. Yeah, it's kind of repetitive sometimes, but at the same time, it's easy because you know exactly what to expect.
But if it's repetitive, do you just not grab a friend and just go through it and just enjoy doing something different in that repetitive thing?
Yeah, I mean, you can always find something, you know, a little bit different. I'm always in the Dreaming City, and it's just because there is so much to look at, and I still haven't found everything that I want to find, and I still don't know how to find the things that I want to find, because I'm not one of those people that are like, oh my gosh, this, you know, unless it's something pressing, I don't usually look things up. I just, oh, hey, have you heard about this? Or I'll get my information from you.
You wait for 19 to get on and say, hey, we're going to go do this. Come with me. We're going this way.
Right. Or Night Demon's going this way. Invite.
Yeah, and I'm sort of the same way. It's like I play Destiny partially for the game and partially just for the people that are in it. Like, I've really enjoyed playing with you guys and playing with our clan, and it's fun to just sort of jump on and see, okay, you know, even if I don't have anything I'm trying to get done that day, just jump on and say, okay, who needs help with a Nightfall? Who's trying to run a blind well? Who's, you know, trying to do a Shattered Throne? Who just wants to hang out and, you know, grind through some Crucible? Just sort of see what people are on doing. Hey, I need to run this story mission again on this character or that character, or hey, I've been out for a couple weeks, I need to go do all this new content, you know, jump into. That's honestly what I use my second and third characters for, is just, hey, you know, I need someone to go do this with, let's go do it. I still haven't unlocked my third subclasses on the warlock or the hunter yet, but you know, because they can play it sort of as needed, although I really enjoy that chaos reach and gambit, but I'm still a titan main, so I jump on and let's see what has to get done, let's see who's around to do it, and let's hang out and have fun doing it. And then the light level progressions, they sort of happen as they happen.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? If you can get into a clan that's quite active, you know, you don't need to be in one that's active all the time. You don't need to, you know, as long as you find the right clan that's for you, really. You know, you'll find these clans that are saying that they're active 100% of the time and they're doing raids, they're doing trials, they're doing gambit. But if you're the kind of person like us that can only jump on at certain times of the day, and that clan doesn't mind doing that, you know, that you can maybe just jump on with a friend, join that clan, earn those clan rewards, because that's another thing you can pick up from Hawthorne. Because again, one thing that we didn't say that is helpful is the clan engrams, that they give you that extra one point of light, don't they? You can get light from Crucible, you can get from the Nightfall, Raid, and Gambit, is it now? Not Trials. And I think you've got four more engrams. They're not powerful engrams, but they are light equivalent. There'll be one more light than what you currently are. Mm-hmm. So you may get something like a weapon to drop that is just right, or a piece of armor. You know, it's whatever suits you, really. And there are a lot of clans out there that you can probably find to jump into. And it's worth having a look around. Have a look on some of the Facebook pages. Have a look on some of the posts on like the 100.io, like I mentioned before. Even on like the apps that are available. There's LFG.net. There's Destiny LFG. You may find that there's a post saying, come and join our clan and this is what we're about. You know, or if somebody's in the wild, you know, and they seem to be really helping you out in like a Nightfall or a Strike, send them, you know, a request to join their clan. They may take you in and you can go from there. So I think clans are a good thing that can help.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. If nothing else, because, you know, if all else fails, even if your clan isn't super active, you've got, you know, up to 100, you know, up, or up to 99 other people that sort of give you on that bonus friends list and say, hey, here's 99 people theoretically out in the world who, you know, let's see who's on the same times I am. Let's jump in and see what they're doing. A lot of folks are, you know, just looking for people to help them out too. So see who's online when you're online. And, you know, if you don't like the clan you're in, there's no reason to stay in that clan. You know, there's no, you know, XP hit. There's no, but, you know, no downside to jumping clans. If one doesn't work out for you, leave that clan, go find another clan. And I agree with Night Team, and, you know, the 100.io is a good place to start. Cause again, if you're, you know, looking for some groups and playing with some folks, and I think there's some clans that are built around like the 100.io site itself. I think there's some groups and clans that have built out from there. So that's always a good place to start. And yeah, and if you're in the tower, just hanging out, inspect some people. If they have a funny clan name, or you go, hey, you know, I want to run a bunch of raids. These guys run raids. Let me jump in with them and just, yeah, shoot some invites out. You know, the worst they can say is no.
Yeah. I used to be part of a clan that required 4 hours of play each week. And it got to the point where I'm like, you know, I was playing while I was nursing my daughter. Now, granted, I also got a VIP for that particular game that I was playing. But yeah, there are just some definite try-hard clans out there. So if that's your thing, that's awesome. But I really like the fact that our clan doesn't, you know, we're casual. It's cool. Get on when you need to.
We have a benevolent overlord.
Yes. Yes, we do.
our fearful leader. Who shall not be named.
Oh, he's been named. He knows who he is. We've mentioned him on here before.
Does he listen? That's the thing.
He does. I gave him the link.
Doesn't mean he's listening.
He just doesn't care.
He left a YouTube comment. He's listening. Okay. Watching our sweet gameplay.
It's more like a, if you say that about me again, you're cut.
So we've got a couple more things to discuss. I just thought I'd put in another weapon spotlight because we didn't have one last week. So if you want to try out a new weapon in the Crucible and adverse to running shotguns, especially with the shotgun nerf coming, then maybe this gun is for you. The Cerberus +1 exotic auto rifle.
Oh, yeah.
With the recent buffs to auto rifles, this gun shreds.
And I'm going to link a video from Destiny Fun Police where he's put a build together with the Cerberus Plus One, and he has so much fun with it. I've had a bit of fun with it, you know, and it's worth giving it a shot. I don't know if you guys have played with it since the buff or not.
Yeah, I mean, especially Titans with your stupid chest plate, man, that gun is stupid good. Yeah, and Warlocks with their auto reload rift, if you have the boots on, oh my god, the gun, it's so dirty. Because, like, at shotgun range, that thing will just delete people. I've killed people out of their supers with that gun as they're charging at me. It's just so damn good.
I don't even know if I've even gotten that gun before.
It's the four-barreled one.
It's a four-barreled. It looks like an auto rifle's been strapped together by somebody in a workshop.
Oh, alrighty.
Have a look in your collections. You might find it.
It's for when you need all the bullets, and all the bullets aren't enough, so you need more all the bullets. And then you put your Actium War Rig on, or stand in your Warlock Rift with your Lunar Faction boots, then you have all of the bullets.
Yeah. Basically, it's an auto rifle that somebody thought would be fun to make into a shotgun.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
I will have to go check that out.
It's actually pretty fun to play. It doesn't have a lot of range, and it's definitely not accurate, but at mid-range, mid to close range, the thing is so deadly. I kill, like, you can take it into PvE and kill, like, majors and shielded enemies with that thing with a relative amount of ease. It is actually stupid good.
And we have a couple of final public service announcements. So if you are seeking the Telesto or the Sleeper Simulant Catalyst, then Esoteric on YouTube has two videos to help you solo the Prestige, just not the normal, the Prestige Eater of Worlds for the Telesto, and solo the Prestige Spire of Stars for the Sleeper Simulant Catalyst. Now, these catalysts have a chance to drop from any of the chests in their respective raids, and he shows you how to get to each chest in each raid encounter. So I'll link those in the show notes, because one of them, it's best if you play as a hunter, and I think that is the Spire of Stars. I think it's the first chest that you can get from that. Although I think I have seen another video where he shows you how to get to two of the other chests in that raid, but I'm not 100% sure, so I haven't linked that yet. But the Sleeper Simulant is basically a Titan or a Warlock drifting over the first door that you have to get into the raid, and then gliding over or jumping over all the different platforms, and then falling down into the gun barrel to be shot out, and fall down to where waits and you land on that platform.
Yeah, I hate that part.
There's a chest at the bottom there that can drop the Telesto catalyst. So he shows you how to get into how to do those two encounters without a full raid team, and get the get a chance at the catalyst. It's not guaranteed, but again, you could do it every week, so it's something to do. A reminder that the Bungie reward for the last word is ending soon. So this is for the Bungie reward. So you can either get the replica hand cannon or the T-shirt. So you've got to have received your code from the Bungie rewards and place the order by the 5th of March by 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And another reminder for the Bungie rewards, this time for the Triumph seals. So if you've actually managed to unlock any of the Triumph seals, you've got until the 30th of March to actually claim the reward, and then you've got until the 30th of April to actually purchase the reward on the Bungie store. So again, that's another thing that's coming up that's going to run out soon. So if you've got those Triumph seals and you want to get those pins, you've only got a couple of months left to do that. And again, I'll link that in the show notes. So this is where we all say goodbye to Respawn.
What do you mean Respawn?
No, we always say goodbye at the end of the show. We do like a big group hug and we say bye, and then we all say bye and I play the outro music, and then that's it.
Each other, and
do we? I don't remember ever doing that at all, ever.
All right, this has been Two Titans and Two Hunters this week, as we've been joined by Frosty Havoc. You can find her on Xbox Live at FR0STYHAV0K. We'll put a link in the show notes as well, because she's here. No Respawn is NO1 Respawns INRL on Xbox Live and nowhere else, because he doesn't love you and doesn't want to talk to you. This has been Parody, PEROTY, and Night Demon, NITEDEMON. You can find us on Xbox Live or on Twitter. You can email the show at two titans and a hunter at hotmail.com. And the system works, because we got our first email this week.
You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/2titans_hunter. You can find our Frozen Clan page at join.frozen.party. There's a zero in Frozen. You can find us on Facebook, on YouTube, on Spotify, on anywhere you can download this podcast. Download the podcast. We're at 2titansandahunter.podbean.com. That'll give you all the ways to find us. Until next week, say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.